Hi, I'm Leah Canland with my husband Steve, and you're listening to Our Insightful Adventures, a show that chronicles our travels around Australia and the savvy, scientific, and scenic things we experience along the way.
So today on the podcast, we are talking about our time in New South Wales. So from crossing the border from Victoria into New South Wales, we kind of went up the coast, but it was still raining a lot. So we were going to hit some beaches, but since it was raining, we pretty much just went to Sydney. And then from Sydney, we were there for a few days and then went over to the Blue Mountains and experienced the beauty of that. After that, we kind of went to a place called Newcastle, Yamba, and hit up another small town called Nimbin before crossing the border into Queensland. And we traveled 2,500 kilometers, or about 1,500 miles, and we did all that in 13 days.
So this episode is going to cover our entire time in New South Wales. Like Steve mentioned, it was raining the first 2-3 days that we spent in the state. But in between the showers, we managed to fit a few things in. We tried some oysters, which are pretty iconic meal up that coast. We checked out some cool beaches that had some awesome rock formations and beach walks. We saw some blowholes in the town of Kiama. What else did we do? Just saw some beach caves.
Yeah, so we tried to do some small town adventures. Again, it was just kind of raining, so it was kind of hard to explore everything. But we tried to do our best before we got to Sydney. But Sydney was pretty much our first biggest thing that we did in New South Wales. Mm-hmm. And it's probably, Sydney is probably one of the most, like, iconic Australian things to do, or cities.
When I thought about Australia and we were first moving out here, the Sydney Opera House was definitely one of the images that came to mind, when I thought about Australia. So, and actually, fun trivia fact that probably many people know, but the capital of Australia is not Sydney, but it is another city in New South Wales called Canberra.
So Sydney was awesome. We've already discussed how we're not big city people, but exploring Sydney was cool. And of course, we hit the Sydney Opera House, which is just a must do if you go to Sydney. If you do nothing else, you have to at least go to the Sydney Opera House, and you can walk around it, outside of it, for free.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to miss anyways. They make it really accessible, which is awesome. We went during Chinese New Year, and so there were some awesome art installations of all of the different years, all the different Chinese New Years, all the different animals, so that was cool. Yeah, it's all in Circular Quay. You see the Harbour Bridge, you see the Sydney Opera House. There's another little district close by called the Rocks, which is a historic part of Sydney.
Yeah, it's just a cool, definitely a cool part of town. A lot of cafes, a lot of stuff to do. And of course, the Sydney Opera House is just super awesome and iconic.
Yeah, so our first full day in Sydney, we bought tickets to go see an opera the following day.
So we bought tickets to see an opera at the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah, which is so cool. And
the opera was King Roger, a Polish opera written in like the 1920s or something. So I guess technically it's not like a classic opera. But not like we know or care. We still saw an opera.
Yeah, but before we totally get into the opera, the rest of that day we spent at Manly Beach, which is another very popular thing to do in Sydney, basically.
It's overrated.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I was sort of going to build up to that a little bit. But But yeah, it's a really popular thing to do because you can ride a ferry from that circular quay over to Manly Beach, and it's
Which is cool to do because you'd the ferry, the boat kind of goes through Sydney Harbour, which is cool.
yeah. So it's worth it for the ferry ride. And then yeah, the beach itself was very overrated. There were tons of rips whenever we went there, rip currents, and so you could only swim at a certain part of the beach, and there were lifeguards that were just yelling at everybody the whole time on their megaphones. It was super crowded, and there were blue bottles or Portuguese man-o-wars, which are these, basically they're jellyfish that sting you and wash up on shore, and they were everywhere. So it was terrible for three reasons.
Yes, and another spoiler alert, we did go to Bondi Beach as well, and that's way overrated as well.
It is overrated, but I liked the vibe at Bondi at least. I mean, it was crowded, but they had that cool skate park there, and so there were these like skater dudes and skater chicks and skater children that were all like
Skaters.
that were all hanging out at the skate park, and there's a lot of this essentially street art, and the beach was not as crowded. I mean, we went like on a Monday morning, so maybe that had something to do with it, but I definitely was digging Bondi more than Manly. And we didn't have a chance to go to Coogee, which I'm sure is a big no-no. Those are the three main beaches that you hit up in Sydney, but we ran out of time and we weren't that impressed with the first two, so we didn't feel like we were missing out.
Definitely not. It was just everything I don't like about beaches. But
Yeah. But the next day, we saw the opera at the Sydney Opera House.
yeah, don't you have some stuff on the Opera House itself?
Yeah, so the Sydney Opera House actually has a super fascinating history. We didn't pay to take a tour through the Opera House, but after looking into the history for the podcast, it actually sounds super fascinating. Yeah, so essentially, there was an architect named Jørn Utzon who won a design competition, and he designed that iconic Sydney Opera House. And in 1959, they began construction. But basically, it was plagued with a lot of problems.
Mostly just political drama problems, right? Not like construction problems.
There were some construction, so they forced the construction to happen before the actual plans were finalized, and so construction needed to move forward before they even knew how they were going to, like, construct those shell-shaped sort of arches, you know, that was a problem. And when they were building it, they couldn't figure out how to pump out the groundwater. And so there were some like construction technical issues, but yeah, there was a lot of political issues. They went over budget, lots of delays. It was basically a nightmare, and eventually they went super over budget. It was supposed to be a $7 million building, ended up being $102 million, but that was in the dollars back in 1973 when it was completed. Nowadays, $102 million would be a lot more money.
A lot.
And the architect, Jørn Utzon, he quit before the building was completed, and it had to be picked up by a group of other Australian architects. So sounds like it was full of drama and problems, but obviously people pulled it together and created a beautiful building.
What's kind of cool about this story is that Australians picked it up and finished it. And it's in Australia, Sydney. So that's kind of cool. Even though the original design may have been a Danish guy, the Australians were the ones that like took it through to the finish line.
Yeah, super awesome. Go Australia.
Go Australia. And so the next day we saw an opera. So like I said, it was called King Roger. And it was all in Danish, but they did have these little
It was all in
screens,
Polish.
Polish. And they did have these screens kind of to the side of the theater that had surtitles, so we could kind of follow what was going along, which was helpful, because otherwise we would just have no idea.
The program did give a little summary, which was helpful, but yeah, it was an amazing performance. There's actually six concert halls in the Sydney Opera House, and we were in the second largest one, one of the main theaters, and so that was awesome. And we scored amazing tickets. We were just six rows back.
Yeah, it was awesome. They had a live pit orchestra, and I mean, yeah, it was just awesome. All the performers were incredible singers and incredible players, musicians, all of them. I don't know what it takes to be a performer at the Sydney Opera House, but I imagine you have to be like tip of the spear.
Yeah, we were seeing the best that the world has to offer as far as opera talent and musical talent. So that was amazing to see. And the set was so cool.
Yeah.
It was essentially, so the story of King Roger is just this Polish king that is a very religious Christian, and then there's this prophet that comes to town. He calls himself like a shepherd, but he's just like this pagan prophet, and he leads all of King Roger's people and his wife away from the religion, and then just everybody becomes pagan, and there's like lust and desire sort of ruling the people, and everything turns into disarray.
And the king falls, he loses his whole kingdom, and this prophet guy kind of takes over the kingdom, and eventually ends of this prophet, this shepherd, kind of taking control, and King Roger kind of walks away. So he doesn't get wrapped into the deceiver, I guess, you know, and he walks away from his kingdom, from his people, and
his
decides
wife.
To start anew.
Yeah.
And everyone gets roped in and seduced into this just, yeah, lust and greed and everything.
Yeah, it was way awesome. And the set essentially consisted of a giant head that was like three stories tall, and there was some very cool light playing on it, and then the back, like you'd see the head at first, and then during some of the scenes the head would rotate around, and it would be sort of like the palace and other things. It was amazing. Yeah.
It was awesome. I'm not like a huge opera person, but this was cool.
Yeah. So that was our once-in-a-lifetime opera at the Sydney Opera House. And that pretty much wrapped up that day. We were able to meet up with some friends in Sydney, which was really great to hang out with people outside of the two of us.
Yeah. And then a day later, we went to Chinatown. And Sydney has a cool, pretty big, vibrant Chinatown. And it being Chinese New Year's, it was pretty bustling. And we got dinner there. And yeah, Sydney's just kind of a cool town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome. So that was our time in Sydney. And then on Valentine's Day, we went over to the Blue Mountains, which Steve was talking about. And the Blue Mountains, they're part of the Great Dividing Range. They're about 65 kilometers inland, and they're just west of Sydney, and they're amazing. They are
so pretty. We did several bushwalks, a waterfall hike, and they are just super pretty. Like, yeah, really, really enjoyed the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, and the reason that they're called the Blue Mountains is because the eucalyptus there, the oil that it gives off, gives the whole mountains a blue sort of haze.
Yeah, which you can definitely see when you're kind of walking around. So one of my favorite things was Wentworth Falls, and that was just a multi-drop, huge waterfall that had over 1,300 steps down to the bottom. We counted, that's why we know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 2,606 steps round trip.
Yeah, but that was super pretty, gorgeous waterfall.
Yeah, and there were like these ladders. The descent was so steep, you had to go down like ladders and obviously tons of steps. It was an amazing waterfall. One of our other favorite hikes there was a hike called the Grand Canyon, though. That was cool, too.
That was very cool. Just through not like the Grand Canyon in the U.S., but still just this pretty canyon that you went down into this canyon with lush green forest all around and small waterfalls and water leaking out of the rocks. And we saw a couple water dragons.
Yeah, yeah. There were some yabbies maybe in there, like some
Crawfish.
Yeah. caves, birds. It was such a cool rainforest walk.
Yeah, it was like walking through a fairyland.
Yeah, it was amazing. So lots of cool hikes to do in the Blue Mountains. It's a big, big area.
Yeah, we could have spent more time there, but
if only
we had the time.
Yeah. Oh, we also did the iconic thing to do at the Blue Mountains is the Three Sisters. Just got to throw that out there. It's basically just a lookout and a really, really short walk if you want to get a little bit closer. Overrated. I guess do it, but don't do it.
Yeah, I guess do it, except not. Yeah, it's just another thing that's just like that is a tourist grabber, and just they bust people in and out, and it's just like, oh, look, a rock cliff that kind of has three separate parts, but that's it.
And it's at the visitor center, but there's no parking at the visitor center, so you have to pay for parking. So they suggested that we go after 5 o'clock when you don't have to pay for parking. It's all just a ripoff.
It is. But I guess if you're there, see it. But don't go to the Blue Mountains to see the Blue Sisters, or the Three Sisters. Go to the Blue Mountains to do other stuff.
Exactly.
And then from there, we did go to Ellenborough Falls.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Which is the second largest single drop waterfall in the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, which is a weird classification. We were trying to figure out what the largest single drop waterfall is and what the largest waterfall in the world is. And there's just too many different ways to classify a waterfall. It can be the tallest. It can have the largest volume. It can be the widest. So it's hard to, you know.
It's hard to know. But according the biggest single drop waterfall is still found in Australia. So it has one and two. Anyways, it was actually kind of out of the way and kind of difficult to get to through a lot of dirt roads and a lot of winding roads. But it was super pretty. And we hiked all the way down to the bottom and actually went to get in. And I did get into the pool, but the water was so rushing. I don't know if you've ever been at the bottom of a huge waterfall, but it's actually kind of hard to breathe. I don't know what it is. The water kind of, so I don't know if it takes out all the oxygen, but it was kind of hard to breathe. And the pool actually was rushing pretty fast. So I got in, but I didn't swim over to the waterfall because the water was rushing and it was kind of hard to breathe.
Yeah, it's good to get out at that point. That's
like, maybe this is not a bad good idea.
Ellenborough Falls, it was beautiful, definitely. And then we made our way up to Newcastle, just north of Sydney. And there was quite a few cool things to do there. But one of the main things we did was walk down the jetty and we visited Fort Scratchley.
Yeah, and so Fort Scratchley is significant because it was attacked by a Japanese submarine on June 8th, 1942. The submarine attacked, and it fired, I think, over 34 shells on the fort of Fort Scratchley, but only three exploded and with no major injuries. And they think that the Japanese submarine was using faulty ammunition. That they stole from the British that was used in World War I. So I'm not a historian. I don't know if that's true. But anyways, for whatever reason, the attack just wasn't successful because only three out of 34 fired shots actually exploded. And so Australia was attacked multiple times during World War II, but this one is significant because it's the only time that an established military fort returned fire on an enemy vessel. Every other time Australia was attacked, it was by aircraft, and this one was the submarine attacked a fort, and the fort returned fire. And actually, since it was at night and it was dark, they didn't hit the submarine, and the submarine eventually escaped. But the cannons that the fort used were installed during World War I, and they're still actually functioning today. And there were 9.2-inch artillery cannons that fired back.
Wow. Yeah, and just Fort Scratchley in general, I'm not... I don't appreciate history, war history, as much as Steve. I was not excited to go there, but I will say that it was manned by volunteers, and the volunteers there that we ran into were so helpful and so knowledgeable and so passionate. I was super impressed with Fort Scratchley, and I showed up not wanting to be there, and I got roped into some of their cool stories.
Yeah, it was cool. Anyways, and they're continuing to restore, and
they fire a cannon every day at 1 o'clock, and
during specific holidays in Australia, they fire all the cannons, and they're restoring some other really cool cannons. Anyways, I thought it was cool and cool World War II history.
Yeah. And so from Newcastle, we just continued going up the coast. We stopped at Port Stephens and did some snorkeling at a marine sanctuary called Fly Point. And that was good just because Steve and I hadn't snorkeled in a long time. It was our first time snorkeling on the east coast of Australia in the Pacific Ocean. So that was cool. So that was good to stop there and snorkel for a little bit. Stopped at some vast sand dunes. And then the next day, I got a new niece in personal news. My sister and her husband successfully adopted an adorable girl, and, that was super awesome for them.
So congratulations.
Yes. Although I got really homesick that day. That was actually one of the hardest days of the entire trip.
That was super, not just because of homesickness, but just that was maybe for reasons we won't go into on the podcast, a really, 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 really tough day.
Yeah, that was a hard day. But so happy for my sister. And that's all that I want to say about that.
So the next day we went to Port Macquarie, which has a koala hospital. So it's all manned by volunteers, and they take in injured or sick koalas with the goal to release them back to the wild.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about koalas in previous episodes, but at the koala hospital, I actually learned a few more things about koalas that I wanted to share. So after 35 days of gestation, a koala fetus crawls out and attaches to one of the mom's teats in the pouch. And at 3 to 5 months, the mom provides something called pap, which is technically some type of fecal material, like the mom's fecal material, and it's fed to this joey, and that actually provides the bacteria necessary for the joey to break down eucalyptus leaves. And so after 3 to 5 months, the joey can start to eat the eucalyptus leaves, which is the staple diet of all koalas. And then after a year and a half, the joey becomes independent. So that was interesting. I didn't know that.
Yum.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then the other interesting thing is that koalas are also, they have these home ranges, and the alpha males and females, they occupy the best habitats. And then lower ranking males and subadults, they live in adjacent habitat that sort of overlaps, and they're lesser quality habitat. And in these urban areas, the koalas, their habitat or their home range could be divided by a road or people's backyards. And that's where this koala hospital gets a lot of their patients, is from vehicle collisions and from dog attacks. And of course, chlamydia too. Actually, chlamydia is a very serious killer among koalas, and the chlamydia is mostly found in areas where the koalas are pressured to live close together because, again, this habitat loss. And so when they're overcrowded, they did suffer from poor nutrition, and then their immune system is lower, and then they're more susceptible to chlamydia, which it affects their eyes, they go blind, and their urogenital tract. So
yeah, it's a tough situation for koalas. They are getting hit by cars and attacked by dogs and cats. And then because of all this, they're getting crammed together. And so this chlamydia disease is still just another attacker on them. So go us humans for that.
Yeah, but this koala hospital is doing really cool work. And who doesn't love koalas? They are adorable.
They are adorable.
And then after that, we did a few other small town adventures making our way up the coast. But we made sure that one of the very last things we did in New South Wales was check out this town of Nimbin.
And Nimbin is the most hippiest town I've ever been to. That's probably saying a lot. And it's this small one street town. And just walking up and down the town, how many times did we get offered drugs or marijuana? Like three or four times?
Yeah, three times.
And then you could buy it other times. And that was just people just like calling out. Like people had no fear of like, hey, do you guys smoke? Do you want edibles? Do you want this? Anyways, but the cool thing that we did there is we had our tarot cards read. And we had them read as a couple by a totally legit person. And I'm not one to, like, totally, like, put stock in the tarot cards. Like, I don't know, Ken, I'm not going to take it to the races, but the tarot card reading was very consistent throughout the whole tarot card reading, and she brought up some very specific things about both of us individually, about us as a couple, about things that may happen in the future. And it was just, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was super interesting. It's kind of hard to know how valid or the validity of tarot cards. But it was, I liked it, and I'm definitely taking some things to mind and continue to think about it. And I don't know, I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was just kind of like the thing to do when you're in the town. She also did numerology, which didn't quite impress me as much as the tarot card reading did, but it was, not only was it fun, but if nothing else, it was encouraging. And whether or not she was just feeding our ego, I don't know, but it was, she said some things that were nice to hear and that we needed to hear, and it made us optimistic and put us in a good mood. And you know, that for nothing else, it was worthwhile for that.
And then we drove into Queensland. So that will kind of wrap up our time in New South Wales.
Yeah, we tackled it all in just about 2 weeks. And New South Wales, it was awesome. I had a great time. I wish we had more time. We had to skip a lot of small, cool beach towns along the way. The weather didn't always cooperate, but just cool, cool state.
Yes, agreed.
So in the last segment of our podcast, each of us share either a personal insight from our travels or a little adventure that wasn't covered earlier.
And I'm going to share the insight again this week. And the insight is about the opera. So I really love music, but I'm not a musical historian. And I think, at least in my mind, I figured out what makes opera both an opera and so hard to listen to, is because in the opera, there wasn't any like repeatable themes, at least not in rhythm. There wasn't like a verse, chorus. You could kind of, in any predictable way, it just kind of was this flowing thing. And I think that's what makes operas cool, is it tells this whole story and it flows and it continually changes and it doesn't repeat, just as a story in life doesn't necessarily repeat. You know, you don't always go back through the exact same thing, which is cool, and that's what makes an opera an opera, but it also makes it kind of hard to listen to, because as a musician, I like repeatable things. I like kind of anticipating what comes next, just a little bit. But operas, at least this opera, and I'm generalizing here that most operas don't do that. So I don't know if anyone listening listens to opera and agrees or disagrees, but that's kind of how I categorize operas.
Yeah, that actually made a lot of sense to me. When Steve was first explaining, I was like, oh yeah, but Les Mis, that sort of, you know, doesn't have, it is a whole story told in song essentially, but there are still those things that you can anticipate in the music itself and in the lyrics. And yeah, it's just something that is, I think, an acquired taste.
Is Les Mis an opera, though, or is it just a musical?
No, it's just a musical, and that was the closest that I was trying to compare the opera to, you know, because it's sort of sung throughout, but it is a musical. It has those songs that come back and, you know, essentially sort of verse, chorus. So, yeah, I think Steve nailed it as far as doing some musical analysis on what makes an opera different from other lyrical pieces of theater.
Which has to be so difficult as a musician to play. You have to learn this, like, 2 to 3 hour thing. You can't be like, oh, I've already learned that part, check. You have to just learn 3 hours.
That's true. That's very true. Well, the adventure that I want to share from our time in New South Wales, there were so many adventures that we couldn't cover, but one of my favorite adventures was watching Steve step up and be an amazing human being. So what happened is when we were in Newcastle, we were driving down the street. I was driving, and I noticed that there was a woman to the left that was crossing the crosswalk and had fallen down. And I said, oh, Steve, look, she fell down. And Steve looked, and he immediately jumped out of the car and ran over to this woman that had fallen in the crosswalk and still hadn't been able to get back up. She was laying down. She hadn't hit her head, but I just pulled through the intersection and sort of let them take their time. And Steve was there. She was like an older woman, and she was okay, just shaken. I guess one of her legs had given out on her, and so she wasn't able to get herself up without a lot of help from Steve. And Steve was like, she was so shaken up that she couldn't cross the street on her own, and so Steve had like linked arms with her and was walking across the crosswalk with her, and my heart just about melted seeing what a good guy my husband was. Didn't even hesitate for a second, jumped out of the car and helped this woman. I kid you not, it was faster than I could even react. I was so impressed. And then do you want to say what happened next? It wasn't just that he helped her across the street.
Well, I asked her if she was all right. I asked her if she hit her head. She didn't. She was coherent. She knew what was going on. And I was like, where are you going? Do you need a ride home? And you could tell she just was embarrassed. But she did ask for a ride home. And we're like, yes, absolutely. Our car only has 2 seats. So Leah got out, and she waited at the bus stop, and I helped her inside the car, and she gave me directions back to her house, and I took her to the door, and when she got in, she was very thankful. She just walked down the street, so it wasn't that big of a deal to drive her back, but she wasn't in a condition to walk back to her house or to continue on, and so just helped her out.
It was amazing. So, yeah, that was the adventure. It's more, again, Steve's adventure than mine. I was just a witness to Steve's good deed, but that was awesome to see. It was awesome to see Steve step up, not awesome to see somebody fall down. but Steve, yeah, just such a quick thinker. And he helped that woman out.
Yeah. That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. You can always catch us on Instagram at Insightful Adventures. And catch you next week.
Yep. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us. We also update our current location and our Instagram profile. So just see where we're at. We're actually wrapping up our time in Australia. We only have a few more weeks. So just keep posted for the wrap-up of our whole Australia time.